If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine light of the all that is. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. So our seminar topic this evening is Moving Beyond Body Definition. So let's start with a meditation and take a deep breath and call yourself forward into integration with your Atma, the I Am Presence, the soul, the buddhi or higher consciousness, the mind, and into the physical body, the brain, the neurological system, and down into every cell of the body. And intend and flood your entire system with the light of your own divine Atma, your own divine spirit essence. And intend, if you will, that whatever is for your highest good this evening in terms of your integration, activation, the stirring up of that next level that's ready to present itself to you inwardly, and whatever no longer serves you, if that could be lifted through grace, we allow that to happen also. And we ask for greater awareness, greater conscious awareness of our own divinity and of the divinity inherent in all life, and of the love that is the substratum and the background of all occurrences, regardless of how they seem to play out in time and space. The love and the light is the truth, and the appearance is but the distortion fields that the mind projects upon the innocence of Akasha. The Akashic field is the field of atomic energy upon which consciousness places a definitive impression. And because your consciousness is literally the consciousness of God, although, let's say, dimmed by human perception, it nevertheless is divine intelligence operating through you, however dimly. And that consciousness must be obeyed by the malleable field of creational atoms. The quantum field has got to morph into congruency with the energy field you place toward it. And that simply is the way that we are each learning to be more responsible and more conscious co-creators with Divine Source. So the spiritual path, beloveds, is simply a progressive moving beyond body consciousness to atmic consciousness. We use the word atma, which simply means spirit. But it has a little cleaner definitive here, because it's not mixed with many interpretations. Atma is the pure, unconditioned spirit that we truly are. And so it's the moving from identifying with yourself as a body to identifying yourself with the Atma or spirit. So life in the human sense is a journey without distance from the personal limited self to the impersonal unlimited self, or from limited light to unlimited light. For from light, all has emerged, and in all life and light, all things exist forever, ever intrinsically one with that divine source of light. So let's start, as I always like to do, with you, where you are right now. That's the only place we can ever start, is with ourselves. But before we get into this evocative examination of where we are in this equation, let me read what Sai Baba has to say about the Atma and what it is. The Atma is the unseen basis, the substance of all the objective world, the reality behind the appearance, universal and immanent in every being. It is inherently devoid of attachment, is imperishable, and does not die. It is the witness, unaffected by all this change in time and space, the immanent spirit in the body, the motivating force of its impulses and intentions. It is one's own innermost reality, one's divinity, the real self, the soul. The Atma cannot be grasped through metaphors and examples. No form can contain it. No name can denote it. How can the limited comprehend the unlimited? The now measure the ever. The wayward understand the stable. The Atma is everywhere at all times. It is like milk in its color. It is white everywhere at all times. Under all conditions, as milk, or as butter, cream, or ghee. So too the Atma persists unchanged, however many changes the thing motivated by it might undergo. The Atma contacts the senses of perception and affects the mind. It awakens the intellect to discriminate and decide upon the lines of action. The Atma activates the instruments of thought, speech, action, expression, and communication. The eyes see, but what force prompts them? You may have ears, but who endows them with the power of hearing? Words emanate from the mouth. But what urges us and frames the manner and content of the speech? That force acts like the cells in a torch, or flashlight, that provide the bulb with the current to illuminate it. Doctors know that the body consists of cells, billions of them, alive and alert, busy and active. Each cell is motivated by the Atma. It is immanent all over. The Atma is in each of them, as well as in every spot of space. When we realize it as such, it is experienced as effulgent, total, splendorous light, endless, incomparable, unique light. So the reason we don't perceive primarily, and I would say almost exclusively, is the fact we developed a bad habit of identifying ourselves with our limitations in our body, our aches, our pains, our problems. When you think about it, everything that makes you truly unhappy is your identifying with your physical symptoms and your physicality and its condition. and is a characteristic of every enlightened being who goes deeply into any form of meditation, that they transcend that sense of bodily definition. They totally go beyond it. We call it in the path that I follow, soul transcendence, which means to move your spiritual inner awareness into the viewpoint of the Atma or soul, and to rise above whatever it is you think is confining or detaining or limiting or in some way adversely affecting you. There is no condition that doesn't vanish when you get beyond your physical body. You know, when you go into any altered state, whether it's a deep state of concentration, contemplation, or transcendental states of samadhi and meditation, you don't feel your body. Your body is completely, it completely drops below the level of your attention. Now, I believe that we're in an age in which we are to embody divinity fully, which means being a practical mystic, a practically integrated, conscious individual that moves about very practically and efficiently and effectively in the world, and at the same time is God realized. And that's the level of consciousness that I'm speaking into now, which is a big, huge stretch for all of us, because we're learning for the first time how to import and integrate that divine self that we are in the everyday worldly affairs, which is kind of like setting the radio dials so that you can pick up a certain frequency of spirit all the time. You're always listening to that inner harmonic of light and sound, which is the divine word literally speaking through you and vibing you into your environment. You can become a conduit of that light and sound frequency of truth and divine light wherever you are, whatever you're doing. Of course, you're going to modify your behavior, your speech, and your presentation to be, you know, congruent with your environment. You're not going to look like some freak. But you know what? Everyone can understand loving kindness and sweetness of temperament. Everyone can understand patience and equanimity. Everyone can understand a person who lives in a state of divine balance and beauty and harmony. And that is the fruit of the divine spirit when it fully occupies and flows through your instrument. You become a very harmonious and loving and non-inflictive presence in the world that's welcomed by everyone. There is no need to isolate and back off from participation in life. And in fact, the contrary. As you move into spiritual identification to where you begin to be that all the time, literally all things are open to you at that point. You have gone beyond the levels where the things that normally would cause a younger soul to trip and fall or become ensnared, you can see them coming and sidestep them. You've developed the wisdom to walk in conscious God awareness. So these are things that we're learning now, is how to walk in the world and avoid the pitfalls of entrapment that would cause us to be bound to another incarnational cycle here. We want to step free. We want to be jivan muktas. We want to be liberated souls in this lifetime. And so that requires a certain awareness of keys that enable you to stay free, even while you're participating fully in your life. So it's living a life that's even richer, more vivid, more participatory, and yet being very selective in what you take into yourself, your environment, your mind, your thoughts. Everything, you begin to be like the swan that can separate the pure water from the silt and the mud. You become a hamsa, a paramahamsa like Yogananda. You can discern. So spiritual discernment is an acquired ability that you get from living and making mistakes and learning from your mistakes what doesn't work for you and having the wit to let them go and move to those levels and those areas that do work. So let's do the evocative questions now, shall we? You know, those kind of questions you ask when you want to draw forth your own deeper awareness and knowing. Nobody can do that for you. Do you know if I tell you something that you're not ready to hear, you're not going to be able to hear it? Or if you do hear it, you're not going to be able to understand it and apply it. You have to take what is yours and go with it and let go the things that aren't quite for you at this time. Remember, we're speaking to many, 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 many souls at different levels of unfoldment in these weekly transmissions. And so there will be something for every soul, but not everything for all souls. So you need to learn how to feed yourself, how to nourish your spirit, how to select the proper diet for your particular level of consciousness and awareness and awakening. So let me ask you, how do you define yourself? Simple question. How do you define yourself? Contemplate it. No hasty, superficial responses. You're going to have to take this and have some tea with it. But really ask to see how you do define yourself to yourself, to your own mind, and to others as you interact. So more than likely, you've never really given this much of any thought at all. You know, most people go around thinking, well, I'm me. You know, I'm myself. This is who and what I am. And then they'll go and add a whole lot of definitives, which more than likely prove more than anything else that they do, in fact, believe that they are their body. You know, I've traveled, gosh, all over the world, and I've noticed something very interesting, that in almost every land that I've traveled, and the various cultures that I've visited, there are certain questions that invariably everyone seems to ask a visitor and a new acquaintance, and these are the questions. Where are you from? Or in India, they go, which place? With a little nod of the head, which place? Are you married? How many children do you have? And if you're a man, they never think to ask if you're a woman, but if you're a man, they're going to ask you what kind of work you're in, what kind of business you're in. You see, they're trying to define you by your body, and where it was born, and to whom does it belong? And how many other bodies has it produced? And what does that body do to maintain itself in this world? And, you know, every time people ask me such questions, like my eyes glaze over, I totally don't want to talk to them anymore because I don't relate from body definitions or from relationships. In fact, if I were to try to even began to explain my adventuresome life to anyone, honestly, as I've really lived it and experienced it. I mean, really, who could possibly understand and relate without judging me? So I simply do not fit into any category whatsoever anywhere. And at some point, you know, I believe everyone outgrows and expands beyond all existing categories and definitions. You know, you come to a point where you awaken in and as all of them and none of them at the same time. It's one of those divine paradoxes where you become all things and no thing at the same time. So again, how do you relate to people who think that you're only your body? You know, that's a big problem for me now. Because I've gone into a state where I'm experiencing myself more and more as limitless, formless light. And that's, you know, presenting its own problems. Because I'm losing sometimes a sense of where the enchiladas parked. You know, we have enough trouble trying to find our cars in a parking lot. But what do you do when you go into formless light and you forget that you had an enchilada in the third density down here, that you have a time lock commitment to return to? Hello? I'm having a little fun with you, but you catch my drift. So, of course, you and everyone does identify themselves, you know, at various times with their bodies. I mean, it's just what we all do. It's a bad habit. It's a habit that we have grown accustomed to through many, many lifetimes of telling the story that relates to us as being a body. You know, it's actually a story that the ego mind makes up. The body is totally an invention of the ego mind. Actually, the physical body is a vibration of light manifesting at the lowest rate of densification. It's entirely a mental projection. The body's a thought form. It's something, you know, the mind has made up. And it's held intact by the belief that it is solid and real. So physical definition is a habit of limited thinking formed over many lifetimes and stories we've told ourselves over and over and over in our relating and living our daily lives until we've totally identified with that physical definition and we've lost all sense of who we really are. And the weird thing is, in highest truth, there is no body. There's never been a body. Never at any point have you ever been in a body such as you know it, as a cell of imprisonment. What you have assumed to be the body is only light entrapped in a mental construct. I know, you've got to have tea with this. It goes deep because it kind of, you know, makes you look at yourself and your life in a whole different way. So the body is basically entrapped, limited light. And that is what holds you captive, or seems to, for a time. Now, as souls, or jivas, which is the more correct definition here, we wanted to experience the sense of deepest immersion in matter. We are observing and studying how atoms are held intact by focus of attention. So as souls, we project these thought form appearances that we identify later with as our bodies, and we limit our identity to that one body for a cycle of learning. And then when we're finished in that particular lesson field, we dissolve that thought form and reappear in another. And this is all but our playing with the energies and causing them to adopt various material forms for temporary cycles. So can you expand your awareness to consider your physical manifestation as your playground? It's a playground for expressing your consciousness. This body is like a viewing lens for your consciousness, your spirit, to peer through. You know, these kind of thoughts are like seeds of light. But as you contemplate with them or sit with them and have tea, as I like to say, it begins to activate that dormant awareness, which very seldom ever gets tickled and quickened or evoked by what we read, study, think, and converse about every day. We just don't get exposed to this unless you live in an ashram with an enlightened being or other enlightened beings, which is probably not very likely. Most of us aren't doing that this time around. So, every one of those questions about where were you born and what do you do and how many children do you have and all of that stuff, every one of these things relate only to your present physical body in this lifetime and this episode only. And that applies to your relationships. So here's another question. Do you define yourself in terms of your physical relationships? Do you think of yourself as so-and-so's spouse or so-and-so's parent or sibling or relative or even so-and-so's follower or disciple? Those relationships all relate to the body. In fact, listen to what Sai Baba has to say about himself. This is very, very interesting because here you have an enlightened master that's speaking about how we are to relate with him. And I quote, "Do not posit distance between you and me. Do not interpose the formalities of the guru-friend relationship or even the attitudinal distinctions of the god-devotee relationship between you and me. I am neither guru nor god. I am you. You are I. That is the truth. There is no distinction. That which appears so is the delusion. You are waves. I am the ocean. Know this and be free. Be divine." And that comes from a divine, God-realized avatar, Satya Sai Baba. So when you hang out with enlightened beings, you notice they have a certain way of looking at life and expressing that if you hang out with them long enough, you can catch it. It's like, it's like putting coal next to one that's really aflame, and it ignites, those deadened part of ourselves that have forgotten how to smolder with divine bliss. So stay close to that source of divine light so that you begin to smolder from within with divine fiery ecstasy and life and love, spiritual vitality. It is catching. So we always have to begin with where we are. And, when you look at your relationships and realize that they all relate to the body, and, all of these things that we're looking at here, once you've had a deep look at them from higher awareness, then give yourself a little bit of time, but notice if there's been a shift, if there's been a definitive shift in how you're beginning to awaken beyond the body and its definitions. There will be a subtle transformation when you shine the light of your soul awareness into an area that you didn't look at before. That's a real meaning of meditation. You learn to penetrate areas of unconsciousness with the laser light of your own spiritual awareness. And that's that third eye, that's that inner eye in the center of your skull where the soul is seated. Now it's seated throughout the body, but it has a point of, let's say, seership in the center of your head, that inner awareness, seer portion of the consciousness is centered in the center of your head. And from that lens, that spotlight, you can penetrate areas of unconsciousness, areas of that you've never ever looked into before, and you can actually penetrate them with this beam of your focused awareness. And then it starts to dissolve all of that illusion that has been encroaching upon the light of your bliss. You know, it just begins to, like when you bring light into a dark room, all the shadows just, you know, recede and suddenly you can see. So the first thing to look at is yourself and how you're defining yourself to yourself and to others. The second thing to do is to listen to what you're saying in defining yourself to others in your conversations. Notice also how other people define themselves. See if you can watch the movement of awareness as it flows through your companions. See if you can notice when the ego self is speaking and when the higher consciousness is speaking. Notice also when the enlightened one suddenly speaks. You know, at any moment, that true Atma can also manifest. So you learn to tell the difference between the human self, the ego or lower false self, the negative self, the higher self, and the true being. And it's part of your daily meditation as you go about your day. That way your whole life becomes a yoga. Your whole life becomes a meditation. Notice also how you and others will sometimes argue to defend your own limitations. I was with a woman one time that was in a wheelchair. And when it was suggested that she could be healed and step out of the wheelchair, she said, "Well, I just spent all this money to buy this wheelchair. You know, it's motorized and everything." And you see, she was more attached to the financial investment of having this motorized wheelchair than she was interested in being healed and able to get out of it. So it's interesting that every single soul has in their life exactly what they have asked for on some level, created, allowed, promoted. They have called that forward into their life in some way, for some reason, that they may be totally unconscious of. Or it could have its roots in some distant past, something they prayed for in the past. So you're never in a position where you ever have enough information sufficient to judge yourself or another. But it is interesting to watch how people will sometimes be more attached to their belief in limitation than they are willing to let that go and be empty and allow something greater to have some room to integrate. So when people start to defend their limitations, you have to just go silent at that point, because they're not going to be open to anything more that you have to say. Anytime you notice a resistance, that is the ego saying, "Nope, not going to allow that light to come towards me." So you have to honor even the ego's free will and be silent. But when people are open, and you know, as a spiritual teacher or counselor or healer or whatever, our main job is to observe the slightest opening people may have to the light, because that's our open sesame. And as long as they are presenting an openness, we can work with them. But the minute you notice the defense come up and the resistance and the arguing to defend their limitation, you have to simply say, "Okay, suit yourself. You win." And they'll eventually get to the place where they are able to recognize their own ego, their own ego's resistance, and not allow that lower part of their consciousness to run them. Again, it's exercising of awareness. Don't allow your lower nature to run you. You know, what person of intelligence allows a 3 or 4 year old child to run their life? And that's what happens when you allow your lower self to run you. So once you have noticed some of these insights surface, it's a good idea to journal them. And again, once they've come up into the light of conscious awareness, they can begin to be dissolved very quickly through grace if you give God the wiggle room to get in there. So the real breakthroughs that you have in higher awareness are always going to be reflected in some form of outer transformation. That's how you can tell it's gone beyond information, is that you will see outer transformation. And the only agency that can transform anyone from within is the Divine Spirit. We as teachers and functionaries of the Divine Spirit can be agencies through which the Spirit moves, but actually it's always the person themselves that opens to the light and walks in that higher, chooses to walk in that higher avenue of opening. So notice also how people define themselves when they're relating with you. You know, I feel sad when I hear people owning negation about themselves. Somebody emailed me the other day and related to themselves as a lost soul. Yeah, you know, it makes me cringe. For one thing, it's impossible that a soul could ever be lost. Souls are like cells in the body of God. How can they get lost? Where would they go? Now, this is another one of those ego belief systems that scares the begora out of people, and it's totally fictitious. So nobody can be lost. I mean, our consciousness can become confused and think that it's lost and believe that it's lost and experience lostness, but the truth, you always have to go back to the divine principle of truth, is that we live and move and have our being in God at all times. And God is in us as us. That's the truth. So sometimes you also find yourself defined by others by what you do professionally. For example, a doctor gets to hear a lot of organ recitals. You know, as people present the recital of this or that malfunctioning organ. So if you don't like organ recitals, never become a doctor. I had a wonderful woman who was a doctor who traveled with me for many years and worked with me. Some of you know her, Solario St. Mary Michael. And she was also a trained healer and chiropractor, intuitive. She just was a woman of many, 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 and still is a woman of many talents. And together we did this Ashtar Command mission. And as a healer and chiropractor, the minute anyone met her, they'd start telling her what hurt in their bodies. You know, more organ recitals. And, you know, as for ministers and spiritual teachers like my profession, for example, we get to hear all kinds of recitals, as we're the ones that are supposed to have all the answers and all the solutions to everybody's physical, mental, emotional, spiritual problems. I get them all, and I have to tell all of them that, you know, there are no problems, that your remembrance of who you truly are wouldn't cause to vanish. All the problems vanish when you simply get a whiff of who and what you truly are. You know, it's, all these problems come out of the mood making of the mind. They're all mental hang-ups that we have, habits, bad habits of misidentifying ourselves and the things in our life. So life is all about becoming masterful in meeting and overcoming challenging situations. So if they're no longer problematic, you become masterful in the art of living. But you don't become a master without the spiritual gymnasium, which often looks like, you know, running the gauntlet. But anyway, we can always look at things not as problems, but as initiatory, you know, Olympic trials, where we're tempering ourselves and becoming truly excellent spiritual athletes. So an area in which I was overly defining myself was in terms of my profession as a server and helper and intercessor. And so we all have to watch out for that tendency to, you know, even as light workers, define ourselves by what we do. And again, I'm not what I do. I am who I am. I am the Atma, the same as everyone else. And that's not predicated on what we do or don't do. So this can be a tricky area for light workers, for we often identify and define ourselves by what we do. You know, we'll say, well, I'm a healer, a Reiki master, a commander of such and such a spaceship. I'm a clairvoyant. I'm a channel. I'm a musician. I do body work. I release past life traumas. You know, all of that. And, you know, that probably for a lot of us is familiar daily conversation. So you can do those things and even speak of those things as long as you do not lose awareness that you're not limited to any of that. That who and what you are is beyond all of that, all of it. And these things do not validate your spirituality. They're not examples of spirituality. They're examples of identifying with lesser states of consciousness and making a living in many cases. How spiritual is that? Well, it is if you look at it with loving as a manifestation of your love, which is what our work needs to be. So there are those who, in our, I would say, liberal, open Western society, who define themselves by what they do sexually, with their bodies and with whom. You know, you'll hear people say, I'm gay and proud, I'm bisexual, I'm transgender, or I'm confused as to what I am, and so forth. And again, all of these are body definitions. None of these things have anything to do with your true identity. Sometimes they're karmic lessons that come in because you have judged that action in a past life, and now you have to experience being on the other end of the stick. And sometimes it's just the fact that you give in to the drives of the body and allow, again, that whatever it is to define your identity. So about now, some of you may be thinking, well, wow, that pretty much shot my identity out of the water. Now I really am confused, and I haven't a clue who I really am or how to define myself. And my question to that would be, why define yourself at all? Why not just be with yourself and observe your process? You know, do what you do until you don't. Be where you are until you're not. And in the meanwhile, be here now. And love it all. Love it all. I don't care what it is. Love it. Grace it. And move beyond it. Don't let anything be a snag in your progression into the light of true awareness. So there's no right or wrong in any of those definitions, but they are simply limiting your experience of a greater life expression that's beyond all of them. You know, if you get hunkered down in limitation and make a career out of identifying yourself with some small habit or preference or whatever, you're living way, way, way too small for your vast beingness. So your real identity is something that you really never need to worry about because it's forever safe and hidden in God. But you don't want it hidden from you. You need to bring it into your conscious awareness if it's going to have any manifestation in your present incarnation. But regardless, it is so safe that no matter what you do, what you say, what you believe, or not, nothing can mess it up or mess with your true identity. You can't mess it up, and it can't be messed up. It is eternally whole, perfect, and absolutely pure. So isn't that at least comforting to realize that nothing you do down here in these material realms can touch or affect your true spiritual identity at all? So you can let go of all that guilt, judgment, and self-condemnation. You can just give it up to love. Give it to love and see it dissolve. You don't need to keep score, and the absolute God certainly doesn't keep score either. Just know that as a soul, you are here to experience all things and to remember that no matter what, you remain forever one with God. Absolutely one with God. You're at home and safe. And you and God are forever united. So, those are the things that you remind yourself when sometimes during our ascension process, we feel frightened because we're losing parts of the way that we have become accustomed to defining ourselves and making sense of our lives. And on a spiritual path, just about the time you figured out, well, I'm a Venusian on Earth assignment, and I'm a commander, and I belong to the Ashtar Command, and now all of a sudden you're hearing that none of that is who you are, and you've just finally awakened to an extraterrestrial point of identity. It's like, well, golly gee whiz, I want to kind of play in this pasture for a while. You can, beloved. You can play in any pasture for as long as you want to. You can pretend to be anything you want for as long as you want to do that. There's no hurry in spirit. We're just saying that we're in the time of illumination, and the wind is at your back, and you have a major avatar on the planet, and quite a few other avatars that are not as well known. So if ever you were going to go for it in terms of God realization and getting off the wheel of reincarnation and karma, now would be the time. We don't know when we'll have another opportunity where it is so favorable to awakening to the all that is that you truly are. So you might want to suspend some of your indulgence and sensual pleasures for a planet that's more designed for that particular expression. I hear tell that there's planets out there where everything that we do here and enjoy so much is even better there. So that could be a curate for some of you extraterrestrial aficionados. But be that as it may, there's a time and a cycle for all things. And this is the cycle of our returning to light. And we're returning to light in a very, very powerful way. The ascension process is simply a returning of the atoms to the vibratory rate of light. And this is how all spiritual beings appear and disappear at will. Once they have transcended beyond bodily definition and identification, they open up to the limitless interdimensional freedom that whole light beings experience. So during the involutionary cycle, as spirit, we say, I am light, let me densify into solid form. And in the evolutionary cycle, we say, I am not a body, I am light. And thus we raise our vibrations back into pure light. And that is the cycle we're in right now. It's the in-breath of the divine. So whether we are light, with form or manifest as formless light, we remain the very light of divine life itself. We are that light. We are that awareness. We are that creative consciousness. And, you know, whether we densify into physicality or prefer to manifest in more subtle forms at other levels, consciousness, once freed of bodily identification, is not obliged to manifest in any particular way. You have freedom of choice at that point, real freedom. And so at that point, it's just a preference, or to facilitate whatever it is that we need to do as we go about our cosmic endeavors. So there's a progression in our returning to this higher awareness. Most people really believe that they exist apart from God. And this belief goes through various stages as an individual develops a more conscious relationship with himself and consequently with God. So that sense of difference and separation gradually dissolves, and you come into the happy realization that you're forever divine light, that you are the light itself. That becomes your identity. You identify with being that formless light of divine bliss and awareness. And, you know, regardless of the fact that most people have no idea that they are in this stage of progressive return to light, most of them will catch it indirectly through the radiation of that light source as it flows through your own body and your own speech and your own behavior and manifestation. Because again, you're constantly broadcasting and transmitting your rate of vibration and your frequencies. So for the people who are absolutely clueless, it is helpful for them to get some idea by reading books written by those who have attained spiritual enlightenment. In that way, they can begin to recognize certain changes in how one approaches life that characterize various stages of enlightenment. There are certain things that we do share in common that are characteristic of certain stages of samadhi and certain stages of divine mystical attunement. So our goal is to progress from, again, body definition to identifying with atmic awareness or divine spirit. So we're going from corruptible flesh to immortal light. And this is the truth that Jesus modeled in his resurrection and set forth as the pattern that we're each to manifest. So as the physical atoms of our bodies vibrate at increasingly higher rates of vibration, which they're doing now, gradually they vibrate at the speed of light. And when they do, the physical body is then transformed and transfigured into pure light. And you go from that limited light that's been entrapped in the lower density of the third density dimension into the limitless light of original divine source. And you pass from death to resurrection life, no longer limited to bodily definition. As a being of light, you're free to move in and out of the various dimensions and to appear with or without form as the need and occasion may acquire. And that is the stage attained by the ascended masters. And that is the stage that ultimately the entire human race is destined to undergo. Albeit we're all at various degrees of undergoing this transformation now. So everyone will make it. And it's not about you at all, in fact. It is a God thing in the sense that it is God awakening within its creation, within its many, many forms, which are all the names and all the forms, which are God's forms and God's names. So from divine light we came, and into divine light we shall return. Only this time we have an added coup de grace. This time we're returning as individualized light. We're not going to dissolve into an amorphous mass. If you have built in an individuality in which you have identified fully with your light field, with light itself, then you're developing a cosmic persona, a cosmic individuality that has an existence that stays coherent, that maintains a particular, like the Master Jesus or Buddha or Krishna or Rama. They have individualized their manifestations so that those manifestations stay constant. They don't cease to be. They hold intact. And you are developing also this intact, individualized persona that is a transpersonal persona that is entirely your own unique divine embodiment. This is a new teaching. Most people don't teach about this. But this is the new thing. This is the new teaching. This is what we're doing. So those of you that want to dissolve into nothingness, forget it. It ain't going to happen. That's where you go when you get stuck in the etheric realm, which is the big cosmic void. And that's where certain masters ended up, because they didn't know that there was anything higher to go to. So again, the spiritual travelers are the ones that teach this higher way. But once you have developed this unique spiritual identity, before you will open various avenues of cosmic expression, so that as you graduate from this particular Earth life wave, you have a series of choices that your own nature, your own spiritual identity and nature will predispose you towards getting involved with. And as you go beyond this material creation, you move into the God realms, where they're not in a reincarnational birth and death cycle. They're not functioning under the karmic field. They are functioning through the glory realms of divine direct presence and revelation, which really is not something that can be spoken of, because we don't have a reference point for it at this point. But just know that there's a lot more waiting for you as you graduate from this particular Earth school. So some of you may go forth as creator gods to create new universes. Others may specialize in developing new races of beings or civilizations. Some are like lords of civilizations that oversee civilizations, like Saint Germain, who oversees our particular civilization. And others may choose to manifest as avatars or bodhisattvas or Christs upon this or other worlds. Now, all worlds are inhabited, whether they're suns, moons, planets. Every celestial orb has life on some dimension of life, and sometimes many dimensions on any given world. Most worlds are hollow and have interior life. So other souls may embody as the logo or the logos of some celestial orb or planet or star, because again, every visual orb in the sky is the body of manifestation of some great cosmic individuality. And again, other souls may choose to work with the color rays or wielding cosmic energies. There are just many, many choices of divine expression once you are free of bodily definition and limitation. So from this corruptible flesh, you are moving into immortal light. The body itself is being transfigured into pure light as the vibrations raise and are transformed in this cycle. So our life is eternal, it is ever creative, it is ever unfolding, divine glory and revelation. Our life is love in cosmic expression. So let's go out chanting on I, Hu. Deep breath. Ah, Remember, you are divine light. Your body is something your mind made up. Identify with the light that you are. God bless you, and God willing, I'll be with you this time next week. Adonai.